නමෝ තස්සේ භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්සේ නමෝ තස්සේ භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්සේ නමෝ තස්සේ භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්සේ සම්මා සති ආනන්ද භාවිතා බහුලී කතා රාග විනය පරියෝසානා හෝති දෝස විනය පරියෝසානා හෝති මෝහ විනය පරියෝසානා හෝති ඉති. Dear friends, as you all know, we are discussing Noble Eightfold Path in this series of Sutta teaching sessions. And for that, actually, I have taken Brahmana Sutta as the sort of the guiding sutta, and it is actually available in the Magga Samyutta in Samyutta Nikaya. And there, actually, the incident happened. Kind of an incident happened. There's a Brahmin called Janussoni, and he is going through the city of Shravati with an entirely white color chariot, and he too is wearing white color clothing, and even the horses used are white color. So likewise, it's a entirely a white color chariot vehicle, and it was noticed by the people, and they were amazed by seeing that, and they were quite happy seeing that, and they were telling it's a type of a kind of a divine vehicle. And this was noticed by Venerable Ananda, who was in the alms round, and then after returning back from the alms round, he mentioned this to the Buddha, and he request whether is it possible to have some sort of an analogy between divine vehicle according to the Dhamma. And then Buddha mentioned that it is nothing but the Noble Eightfold Path that we can say as the divine vehicle, as the Dhamma vehicle, as the supreme vehicle which is used in the battlefield of the defilements. Now, therefore, Buddha emphasizes the value of Noble Eightfold Path, and that is why we are discussing one path factor after the other, and now we have come to some extent. And there are path factors belonging to the wisdom sikkha or panya sikkha, the wisdom training, and those two are the sammāditthi and sammāsaṅkappa, right view and right intention. And then we come across sīla sikkha, and that is the morality training. That is where sammāvācā, right speech, sammākammanta, right action, and sammāājīva, right livelihood is there. And then we come across the third training, that is called the Samadhi Sikkha or the concentration training, and there we have three path factors, that is Samma Vayama, right effort, Samma Sati, that is right mindfulness, and Samma Samadhi, right concentration. Now actually we have completed Panya Sikkha, wisdom training, and again we have completed Sila Sikkha, the morality training, and again now we are in the concentration training, and last time we discussed the right effort, Sammavayam. So today we have to discuss Sammasati, right mindfulness. So there's a beautiful explanation given in the Saccha Vibhanga Sutta, which is available in Majjhima Nikaya by Venerable Sariputta. And here he is explaining Katama Chauso Sammasati. Idhauso Bhikkhu Kaye Kayanupassi Viharati ආතාපි සම්පජානෝ සතිමා විනය්‍ය ලෝකේ අවිජ්ජා දෝමනස්සං වේදනාසු වේදනානුපස්සී විහෙරති ආතාපි සම්පජානෝ සතිමා විනය්‍ය ලෝකේ අවිජ්ජා දෝමනස්සං චිත්තේ චිත්තානුපස්සී විහෙරති ආතාපි සම්පජානෝ සතිමා විනය්‍ය ලෝකේ අවිජ්ජා දෝමනස්සං ධම්මේසු ධම්මානුපස්සී විහෙරති ආතාපි සම්පජානෝ සතිමා විනය්‍ය ලෝකේ අවිජ්ජා දෝමනස්සං අයං උච්චතාවසෝ සම්මා සති. So basically he is in summary explaining that sammāsati, right mindfulness, is four foundations of mindfulness. One is dwelling in the contemplating of the body, and one is contemplating the feelings, one is contemplating various mind states, and again various mental objects, mental phenomena, and that is the four foundations of mindfulness he defined as the sammāsati or right mindfulness. So here, therefore, we need to discuss all four foundations of mindfulness. Since we already conducted a series of sermons explaining four foundations of mindfulness under Satipatthana Sutta, today I am not going to go in detail about each and every aspect of the four foundations of mindfulness. Rather, I simply give an overview. So I request you all to refer the previous sermons we conducted on Wednesdays, and that actually have covered comprehensively the four foundations of mindfulness. Now, first of all, we have to consider few aspects when you are developing mindfulness, and here Buddha has emphasized on each and every foundation that one has to maintain certain mental or certain kind of a mindset. Athapi sampajano satima vinaya loke abhijja domanassa. So that is how Buddha explained how our mindset has to be maintained during the development of the mindfulness. So athapi is an ardent effort in order to continue the practice, in order to start the practice and then continue the practice, as well as to abandon various defilements, obstacles coming on the way. You know that at the beginning the practice is quite hard, and there may be various obstacles, and mind is also subjected to various defilements, hindrances. So therefore the beginning is not that smooth, so you need a lot of effort, and at the same time there are various hindrances coming on the way, and maybe lust arising, maybe anger arising, maybe sloth and torpor, drowsiness arising, and sometimes we have various regrets, remorse and various doubts, even about the path, even about what we are doing, whether the practice is correct. So likewise there are various doubts. Now in order to overcome that, one has to have this athapi, the ardent effort. And then sampajano, and before that let's go to satima. So satima is the term representing the mindfulness. So rather than dwelling in the past or in the future, one has to dwell in the present. Now one is fully in the present moment, and that is where the mindfulness has established. So that is the term satima representing. So we are not in the past or future, now we are fully in the present moment. Now just being in the fully in present moment is not enough, so Buddha emphasized another term, sampajano. That is where we have to be clearly comprehend onto which that we have established mindfulness. Say for example, if you are being mindful about the breath, once the mindfulness is well established, now we have to inquire into the breath, you have to investigate the breath, you have to clearly comprehend the breath, you have to see it at various angles so that you get a clear picture about the breath. So this actually is not an experiment that we are doing like scientists to understand what is the quantitative amounts of various types of air available in the breath. Rather, by doing this exercise, there are various qualities develop in our mind. So that is a kind of a strategy that we are taking. So breath at that sense behave like a tool for us to develop those various qualities. Now that is the quality sampajano Buddha emphasized here. So once the mindfulness is well established, you have to clearly comprehend that whatever the object. And then vinaya loke abhijja domanassang, where you are dispelling various kinds of covetousness and the various kinds of despair arising in the mind. So one has to maintain kind of a balanced mind, equanimous mind as much as possible during the practice. Having said that, if we consider the body contemplation or the mindfulness on the body, so there are, as you can see from the diagram, there are actually 14 methods are explained in Kayanupassana, in the establishment of the mindfulness in the body. So here one is looking at the body. Say for example, say the allowing body to breathe, and while keeping the body in a straight and comfortable posture. So one is maintaining one's attention at the nostril, and there you are observing how breath occurs. When in breath happens, you are aware of it. When out breath happens, you are aware of it. So likewise, you are now recognizing the breath. So basically, if the mind wanders towards the past or future, so without complaining or without sort of blaming ourselves, condemning ourselves, our duty is to bring it back. So again and again, we have to do this task, because at the beginning, mind is not tamed. Mind is quite restless. So it is going here and there. So therefore, we have to again and again focus our attention back to the breath. As we are developing like this, then we understand, okay, now mind is capable of maintaining its attention for a long time on the breath. That is the selected object, and there it is able to maintain the focus attention. So here we can say this is the Satipatthana section, where we have successfully established mindfulness. And then Buddha goes to the next level, that is the Satipatthana Bhavana, or the development of the mindfulness. And there Buddha asks us to see that qualities of the breath, whether it is long, whether it is short, whether it is warm, whether it is cool, whether it is from which nostril it is going in, from which nostril it is going out, whether it is a single in-breath or is it consisting of minute, small in-breaths, or is it a single out-breath, or is it kind of a combination of several out-breaths. So likewise, now you are looking at the breath in a more closely, so that you are able to understand various subtle aspects of the breath. And as you are continuing, you may understand, it may assume that this coolness is arising and it is passing away. And say warmness also arising and passing away. And if we consider the in-breath consists of a series of minute in-breaths, so that also have the nature of movement or sort of a vibration. And that subtle vibration or subtle movement, you are able to comprehend, and there you understand. So it's a kind of a arising and passing away nature is there, similar to the out-breath as well. Now, understanding this impermanent nature, transient nature of the breath, in one sense, explain about the mindfulness meditation, Satipatthana Bhavana. At the beginning, actually, you didn't get that much of a very clear picture, because the mindfulness and clear comprehension is not yet developed. But as you continue the practice, so this kind of a very close attention, scrutiny is possible. And as you are continuing like this, there are various insights arising in the mind. So you understand, okay, this whole process is impermanent. And on the other hand, this is subjected to kind of an oppression because of this impermanence, and therefore can't expect lasting happiness from this sort of a process. And the whole body depending on this process, and not only this process, the whatever the process available in the body is subjected to this kind of inconstant nature, and this whole process is non-governable, and there is no anything substantial. So likewise, you are able to recognize various insights. So as the practice growing, various insights are also happening, and your wisdom is growing. And what in a given moment, say when the mindfulness has well established, clear comprehension also has well improved, and you have continued the practice for a long time, as a result, you are able to develop wisdom. And once it comes to maturity, so there is a possibility of relinquishment. So at this moment, mind is not attached to any kind of a feeling or any constructions. Rather, mind is well observing the nature of the breath. And now you can't even distinguish whether it is in-breath or out-breath. There is a kind of a sensation, kind of a vibration, kind of a movement, and you are so closely observing that. And it is so transient, so impermanent. So by seeing this nature, so mind may in a position not to not being able to get any kind of a sign of the breath. Now the everything appear like flux, everything like mixed, and there's a sort of a dispassion arise, and then the mind probably get freed or released for a moment. Now as you continue this practice again and again, so this process happens again and again, and you are able to recognize this freedom for a short time. Say 5 minutes, your mind is free. There is no grasping, no clinging, no attachment. Similarly, as you are continuing, you can maintain that for 10 minutes. Now you can maintain it for 15 minutes. So likewise, you are now improving. And as you improve this, there you will understand, why can't I maintain this kind of a free state of mind? Mind is now free from any burden, any attachment, any defilement. Why can't I maintain this sort of a state? There you understand, still there are various tendencies available in the mind. They are time to time coming and disrupting the process. So in order to further purify the mind, in order to strengthen these new qualities in the mind, so there you understand the necessity of a morality training, Sila Sikha. And again you understand the value of concentration training, that is the Samadhi Sikha. And again you will understand that I further have to develop wisdom. The value of the wisdom training or the Panya Sikha is understood. So again we are coming back to the Noble Eightfold Path. So that is Buddha mentioned as Satipatthana Bhavana Gaminincha Patipada. Where you are recognizing, in order to further develop these insights, you need to follow three trainings: morality training, concentration training, and wisdom training. So that is the development of the Noble Eightfold Path. So you can see that Buddha explained that from any of these bodily phenomena, you can establish mindfulness, then you can develop mindfulness and recognize various insights. And in order to further strengthen those insights, you have to live up to it. And as a result, you understand the value of Noble Eightfold Path. Now, if we take another example, say, if one is recognizing various element characteristics while walking. So there are also the same situation where first we understand various characteristics, and we are able to establish mindfulness on top of that. So from this end to the other end, you can mindfully walk, and you may feel hardness, you may feel stiffness, roughness, etc. And once you are capable doing that, now we have to further enhance that skill by recognizing various other qualities, various other element characteristics. Now not only hardness or stiffness, there are various other subtle qualities also available in this whole working process. So that is where we are improving clear comprehension. And more and more we are improving, so many element characteristics are possible to recognize. So as you are further continuing, you understand, okay, these various characteristics are quite transient. They don't arise and stay for longer, rather they quickly pass away. So there also you understand the impermanent nature using element characteristics. And not only during the walking, you can develop it while sitting and while standing, and during any posture one is able to develop it. Now this is the Satipatthana Bhavana, where you are developing mindfulness and various insights are now happening. Now as I mentioned before, now as these insights are growing, wisdom is growing, so there could be a situation that mind let go of this whole process because it is impermanent, transient, inconstant, unsatisfactory, and non-governable, and non-self. So the mind starts to let go the whole process, and temporarily mind could get released. So this freedom, this release has to be further enhanced. So there again you can come across the value of Noble Eightfold Path, value of a morality training, value of a concentration training, and value of wisdom training. Now, if we come to Vedana Anupassana, say you recognize various types of feelings are there. Pleasurable feelings, painful feelings, equanimous feelings. So now you have gained some amount of concentration, mindfulness, and using which you are maintaining your attention onto these various kinds of feelings. And you understand. When a pleasurable feeling arises, you understand. When an equanimous feeling arises, you understand, you recognize. When a painful feeling arises, you recognize. And you continue like this. And as you are improving your practice, there also you may understand. So this painful feeling is not a single painful feeling. It sometimes consists of, say, 5, 10, 20 small painful feelings. The whole bunch, whole group manifest as a single painful feeling, but once we carefully analyze, then we can understand it is not a single feeling, rather series of feelings are there. Now, each and every minute feeling is so transient. So, that's a simile that Buddha is giving, like when heavy rain happens, so all raindrops, if they are hitting a water surface, each one generates a water bubble and it quickly bursts. So similarly, Buddha mentioned these various kinds of feelings are quite transient, like water bubbles. They quickly burst, they arise and they pass away. So now you are keeping a close attention to the behavior of these various feelings, and you understand even the pleasurable feeling is undergoing this kind of a process. Even painful feelings undergo this sort of a situation. And even equanimous feelings undergo this kind of a situation. So, in that sense, there is no point of holding any of these. Because even if you are trying to hold a pleasurable feeling, internally it is oppressed by this transient nature, impermanent nature. So therefore you understand it's not worthy and you can't actually hold it. And even equanimous feeling, it is subject to this kind of a transient nature. So you can't have sort of happiness, lasting happiness from this sort of a transient nature. So likewise, the wisdom is growing and now even you can't recognize say subtle differences between various feelings, because now everything appears like a flux. Now more and more dispassion arises to this process. Now mind starts to let go of it. As a result, mind can become free. Like we discussed in the Kayanupassana section, here also mind can become free. So this freedom also short-lived, and you got to improve it again and again. So then you may be able to maintain it for 5 minutes, may be able to maintain it for 10 minutes. So likewise, now you are growing, enhancing. And there also, as with the continuous practice, when you understand, okay, there is a possibility of keeping the mind free from any attachment, free from any grasping, free from any association, quite independent, spacious, fairly simplified, unconstructed. So you understand there's a possibility is there, but why can't I maintain it? Why can't I keep it for a long time? Because still there is a hidden tendencies available in the mind. Time to time they come and interrupt the process. And again you are get on to some various defilements. And in order to further restrain, so you got to incorporate morality training, Sila Sikha. And not only that, you need to clearly see what is really going on. So therefore you need Samadhi Sikha, the concentration training. And using which now you are developing further the wisdom, Panya Sikha. That is, we are coming back to the Noble Eightfold Path. So first we established mindfulness using various feelings, and then we understood their nature. We understood their characteristics, they are impermanent, intransient, sorry, transient nature. And once the mind is released temporarily, now we got to maintain that, enhance that. So there we require a kind of a path, a training. So there are the Noble Eightfold Path coming back to the picture. So likewise, even in the Vedana Anupassana, we can understand kind of a combination between the mindfulness practice and again coming back to the Noble Eightfold Path. And now the path factors are well coordinating each other. Say you are having correct direction by the Sammaditti, right view, and the mind is properly intended towards the practice, Samma Sankappa, and you are maintaining your morality, you are not using words in a bad manner, and you are maintaining your morality, Sila. So that is the Samma Vacha, Samma Kammanta, Samma Ajiva. And the whole process is maintained with effort, because still there are obstacles coming on the way and daily practice has to continue. So likewise, right effort is also there. And you are maintaining right concentration and again now developing Samma Sati, right mindfulness. It's a kind of a collective or collaboration going on between the path factors. Now, if we go to the Chittanupassana, so now you already have gained fair amount of mindfulness through previous practices. Say, Kayanupassana you are somewhat familiar with, and you have developed fair amount of mindfulness through that. And again, if you did Vedanupassana, through that also we are able to develop fair amount of mindfulness, clear comprehension. So you are not a sort of a beginner now. Rather, you already have gained some amount of skill in mindfulness and clear comprehension. So with that skills, you can now watch the mind. So this is little tricky. Previously, actually, when some sort of a bodily process happen, you can keep your attention to that like an outsider. Say, for example, we allow the body to breathe, and we maintain just our attention close up the nostril and we watch. So here we are like an outsider. Body is simply allowing to breathe as it like. So it's another process, it's a physical process. And the recognition happens through the mental process. Now this perspective is quite important. So as we develop mindfulness, so there are various other processes, and we are able to recognize it as a third person. There are various, say, element characteristics. Now we can recognize them as a third person. We suppose that we are walking and foot is touching the ground, and there are various sensations. Like an outsider, we can watch it, watch the whole process, and even can recognize these subtle sensations. Now, this perspective has to be well recognized. Each and every Anupassana, the establishment of mindfulness, has this perspective. So you have your vantage point in order to recognize the ongoing process. In Kaya Anupassana, it is a physical process. In Vedana Anupassana, it is physical as well as mental, some sort of a feeling. And now in Chitta Anupassana, actually, you allow the mind to little freely move, and then you see it as an outsider. There's a beautiful simile given by Venerable German Analeo. So there he mentioned, suppose you are a father or a mother and you have a few children and you are taking them to a playground. And you allow them to now play. So they are jumping, laughing, and running, and so much, so they are enjoying. And you as the parent, you are simply watching them. You should give them freedom to play. But you are not playing, but you are keeping an eye. You understand, I mean, these children require some freedom. They can't just be in the room, in the home. Rather, they have to be given some freedom to play, and you are now taking them to a park and you allow them to play. And they are now playing and you are simply watching. Now, similarly, once we reach Chittanupassana, so we have to allow some freedom to the mind, because you already have gained some mindfulness through the previous practices, Kayanupassana, Vedanupassana. And you have gone through some exercises so that you have already developed clear comprehension. You are not a sort of a beginner now. Rather, you know what is mindfulness, you know what is concentration, you know what is clear comprehension. Some understanding is there. And some practical experience is also there. Certain skills are already developed. Therefore, you allow the mind to little freely move. And you are now watching, like a third person. Suppose there are lustful thoughts arising in the mind, and you can recognize it. But unlike before, you are not feeding it. So that's the difference. So lustful thoughts are arising, you recognize it as a lustful thought, but you keep it aside. You allow it to come, allow it to be, and allow it to go. Say there are thoughts of ill will arising, and there also you allow it to come, allow it to be, and allow it to go. So you have kind of a non-judgmental attitude towards any of the wholesome thoughts, any of the unwholesome thoughts. Suppose now you are getting a thought of loving kindness. Now, in the previous occasions, probably when a loving kindness thought arises, so you really appreciate it and you want to enhance it. Now, even start loving kindness meditation, metta meditation. But here in the Chittanupassana section, we don't do like that. So we recognize loving kindness thought as a loving kindness thought, and that is also a thought. So we haven't given any kind of a special value to it, rather it is also a thought. And we recognize how it is coming and how it is staying, and we are not promoting it, we are not holding it, and we are not even rejecting it. Simply watching, simply being mindful. As a result of that, it starts to fade away and ultimately disappear. If there's a faithful thought arising in the mind, same situation, same approach. We allow it to come, we allow it to be, and we allow it to go. Now, even very subtle, concentrated states are arising in the mind. And there also you understand, so these are also conditioned. They also can't last forever, and you allow it to happen, but watch it as a third person. You are not fully attached to that blissful state. Say for example, at the beginning, say when you practice Anapanasati, there are sort of blissful states also possible. And at that time, as a beginner, you enjoy it. You want to keep it, hold it. You want to have it more and more. But at this state, when you are in the Chittanupassana section, still, it is possible to experience certain blissful states, but now there is no attachment to hold it. You are not grasping it. Rather, you understand its impermanent nature, and therefore you simply allow it to go. You don't want to hold it. So it may be very high concentration even jhana concentration. And you know how it is arising, you know how it is there, but you are not feeding it, promoting it, you allow it to go. So all these different mental states, various kinds of thoughts, are therefore represent their impermanent nature. And more deeply, profoundly, you understand this impermanent nature. So in Chittanupassana again, so you understand various insights. So you are able to experience various insights by observing the mind. So as you observe more and more, the mind becomes fairly spacious. So the thoughts become less, in the sense their occurrence, their frequency become less. Assume that previously there are say 50 thoughts per minute. Now as you are improving your practice, it may be 30 thoughts per minute. As you are further improving, it may be 10 thoughts per minute. Now you can clearly see how one thought arising, how it is staying only for a short time, and then how it is fading away, disappear. Then another one arising, and it may be trying to tempt, it may be trying to take your attention, but you are quite mindful, you are not promoting or feeding it, you are not rejecting it, there is no any resentment towards it. It is a simply a thought. So with that understanding, now it starts to weaken and it also disappears. Now as you continue, so the spaciousness of the mind, clarity of the mind improves. Now there may be certain periods there is no thought at all. Completely silent, unburdened, clear state of mind. No perceptions even. There are no signs, mental images appear in the mind. Very purified state of mind. So then probably you have to improve it. At the moment, suppose you can maintain it for 1 minute, it is not enough. You have to enhance it for 5 minutes. Now you are continuing the practice. Again and again continuing Chittanupassana, and you are able to enhance it, prolong it. So in order to do this process and in order to maintain that clear, pure state, you understand the value of morality sikha, sila sikha, morality training. And again, you need to maintain the clarity of mind, that is the concentration sikha, concentration training, samadhi sikha. And still there are various hidden tendencies, latent tendencies in the mind, still a fair amount of ignorance is there, craving is there. Now you need enough wisdom to overcome them, to uproot them. So you understand the value of wisdom sikha or wisdom training, panya sikha. So we are coming back to the Noble Eightfold Path. So in Chittanupassana also, therefore you can understand, so there are first actually the establishment of mindfulness onto various thoughts, mental states, and then the development of various insights, and then getting into a path for long-term practice and long-term development. So that is Noble Eightfold Path. Now when it comes to Dhammanupassana, so there also Buddha emphasized this nature. So starting with hindrances, now you are paying close attention to various hindrances arising in the mind, and you can even recognize them at their very early stages. During their inception, you can recognize how an hindrance arising, and now you are not promoting or feeding it, you are not driven by it. As a result, it starts to fade away. Now, as these hindrances are further and further weakened, bojjhangas, enlightenment factors become stronger and stronger. So the mindfulness is improving, then the investigation is possible. You can clearly recognize everything, and you know time to time there are sort of tranquility states, mind is fairly calm, and sometimes even very, say, comfortable feeling is also there, and the concentration is there because the mind is very clean and you can recognize each and every phenomena happening, and equanimity is also there because there is less work to do now. Now the enlightenment factors actually have to develop in a more restful, relaxed manner. It is not that you are striving, rather you are continuing the practice in a more, with a more relaxed atmosphere, with a more relaxed attitude. So Buddha mentioned that Viveka Nisitang, Viraga Nisitang, Nirodha Nisitang, Osagga Parinaming, Sati Sambojjhangam Bhaveti. So one is developing the mindfulness, enlightenment factor with the association of a relaxed state, with the association of a dispassion, with the association of a cessation, and with an attitude of relinquishment. Now, more and more, rather than holding things, grasping things, so the mind is attuned towards relinquishment. Now, nothing remains in the mind. But there were various mental images previously hindered the mind or previously occupied the mind. Now you understood, okay, these signs are now very much like erased. They have blurred, they have gone. And as a result, mind have fairly cleansed. It is more clean now. It is so vivid. Say for example, there is a water pool, and if it consists of a lot of mud and all the waste, garbage, whatever it is, and you can do some sort of a purification process. First, assume that you are doing some hard purification process, so the gross impurities may be removed, and then you are taking it to another filtering process, which may be more subtle, and the middle level of impurities may be removed, and then again you take it to another very subtle purification process, filtering process, and even the small particles say are removed. So likewise, the water become more and more transparent, more and more pure, and even possible to drink. So likewise, it's getting more and more pure, more and more filtered, cleansed, and now you can see the bottom of the pool. Similarly, in the mind, at the beginning there are so many defilements, hindrances, but we are continuing the practice, and as a result of the practice, it is enhancing, developing, and clarity is improving, and stability also improving, and as a result of that, further and further, mind become pure and pure. And when it comes to Noble Eightfold Path, and there again the Four Noble Truths are emphasized, and that is available in the Dhammanupassana, where you are even recognizing very subtle, say, stress moments, tension moments, and you are allowing to letting go. You are relinquishing those, and further the attachment is let go of, and the desires are let go of, and mind is more and more resting on cessation. So, therefore, even in Dhammanupassana, you can understand, okay, it is a sort of a process where it has the establishment of mindfulness, and then the various insights are arising, and now you got to adhere to a path which you have to develop them, and you have to experience them fully, and you have to enhance it, and you have to complete it or fulfill all the necessary qualities, skills, and there you required a very good path. That is a Noble Eightfold Path. So likewise, we can explain Sammasati, right mindfulness, in this Noble Eightfold Path. And with that, I like to conclude today's Dhamma sermon, Sutta teaching session. Now I open the session for questions.
Thank you, Pate. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. So for any new friends that's joining us today, you may ask questions by raising your hand, or you may send them to me via chat. So, Bhante, I have a question. In my personal experience, I feel like my daily practice at home is just kind of maintaining a certain level of practice, or just, yeah, I don't feel like I'm necessarily improving, per se, and only it's during the retreats and intensive meditation time that I'm able to improve. Is this common? And, you know, is there a way for us to be able to better practice with, you know, at home with a busy life?
Actually, it depends on the situation. If you have so much distractions, if you have so many duties again, and if you are still at the beginning stage, so then it would be a little difficult, because you haven't yet straightened the skills, and already they are quite fragile,
And because of the situation, because of the various circumstances, so what is developed may start to fade away. But assume that you have spent fair amount of time in meditation and you are already able to develop fair amount of mindfulness, clear comprehension, and you again have experienced this non-attachment and non-grasping state of mind. So there you become fairly seasoned. You become fairly experienced. And on such situation, actually having some amount of companionship, having some amount of, interaction with people, also helpful. Because, you know, we need to recognize various tendencies available in the mind. So now you understood, now you already understood the pure state of mind, non-attachment and non-grasping state of mind, but still the hidden tendencies are there. Even though you are able to touch the pure state of mind, it doesn't guarantee that the hidden tendencies are removed. So they are there. Now, in order to get an opportunity for them to arise, you need certain amount of association. Now you suppose that you are involved with various daily calls, and there are sometimes resentment arise, sometimes anger arise, sometimes attachment arise, sometimes jealousy arise. So many defilements are now popping up because of these daily calls, daily various activities, and you assume that you are with the office environment and some people are, say, arguing and all these situations. So many defilements are possible to arise in the mind. As a skillful practitioner, you can make use of these opportunities. So rather than taking them personally, so you can see how these defilements are arising, how hindrances are arising, like we do in the Dhammanupassana, Chittanupassana. Even though you do daily course and the office activities, you are on constant guard of the mind. So without your knowledge, can't have any kind of a defilement. Without your knowledge, can't have any type of a feeling. So you understand, okay, there are certain feelings, there are angry thoughts, there are resentment, there are attachments. So knowingly it is, they are happening. So with your knowledge, they are happening now. Probably you can't stop them, doesn't matter. But once they arise, you have a duty. That is to see their impermanent nature and allowing them to fade away and return back to the calmness of the mind, tranquility of the mind, non-attached state of the mind. So therefore, kind of a constant practice is there. So because of whatever the situation, there again kind of a turmoil happens in the mind, agitation happens to the mind, and you recognize it. And you recognize the impermanent nature, you recognize the gross nature, you recognize the constructed, fabricated nature of this new state, and then quickly return back to the previous, very simple and non-attached, fairly spacious, pure state of mind.
Hello, Bhante?
Yes?
Hi. Oh, okay. Sorry. I thought I lost you for a moment. So I think maybe I have the wrong understanding that I thought as your practice continues to develop that your defilement should lessen.
Yes.
I do notice, or should we gauge our level of practice and whether we are improving and progressing based on whether we are able to notice the arising of the defilements and able to see how they evolve and change and, you know, sometimes fade away.
Yeah, actually, your defilements are fading, true. But the thing is, now at the beginning, we are developing ourselves in a more artificial environment, in a sense. Say you are keeping yourself cross-legged and you are in a very quiet place and you are with a lot of effort and high concentration. Under that circumstances, suppose now the defilements are not there. But it doesn't guarantee that they were uprooted. Once you loosen your concentration, once you go out, once you come back home, once you go to the office, again the defilements are arising. Why?
Okay.
Yeah, because
thank you.
Yeah. So because the tendencies are there, potential is still there. Because of the setting, you are able to temporarily subside them. But the developed skills have to be skillfully used to recognize these defilements. In order to recognize that there should be certain opportunities, happen in order to arise them. Now suppose you are with a certain person and he is not behaving as you wish, and you get upset, you get sort of a resentment towards him. Now you got to recognize this defilement. Okay, this is ill will. Previously mind was calm, quiet, free from ill will, but now see the ill will is arising. Now you recognize it. Okay, now you are not actually sort of fearful about the ill will. You know how to handle it. And you see the tendency in the mind. Now the previously it was hidden, but now it has come to the surface of the mind, and you are dealing with it now, and you are allowing it to fade away. Slowly, this manner, we have to weaken our habitual tendencies. So this is the way that we can overcome various defilements, just by being in a concentrated state of the mind. So we can't overcome defilements.
Okay, yes, thank you, Bhante.
Yeah.
Thank you very much. So the next question is, dear Bhante, how do we understand the third person observation as not I? Thank you.
Not I. Good question. Actually, while during the observation, if you get a kind of an ego, so that ego thought also has to be recognized. Say, in Chittanupassana, say lustful thought can be recognized. Say ill will also can be recognized. Similarly, you should recognize how I is constructed, how a feeling of mine is constructed. You feel kind of possessing, you want to have it, you want to make it yours, so that kind of a greediness arising. You got to recognize. And sometimes we create a person, so that has to also be recognized. Say, for example, you are able to maintain your mind clean, but all of a sudden, some incident is memorized, coming to the mind. So, when you are sort of enjoying that incident, so you remember, okay, I am the one who did that, okay, because of me that he is in a good situation now, I am the one who helped. So, likewise, there's a self-appropriation happens. So, you are promoting a self-view. So, this has to be recognized. So the recognition is even common to this eye-making and mind-making. So, if the mind is free from eye-making and mind-making, just the pure awareness is there. There is no constructions. Now, observing like a third person does not mean that I am observing. But the observation is there. So, it's an interesting part, by the way. It is so subtle how tricky the mind is trying to tempt us, trick us, and it is the clear comprehension and wisdom which is helping us to recognize these very illusionary states of the mind. When we are able to overcome one hindrance, we may be trapped in another hindrance, another defilement. So we have to be very skillful and very humble and with a fairly pure state of mind in order to recognize these subtle defilements.
So the next question is, Bhante, can you further elaborate the characteristic of non-attached state? Some of us may be experiencing it, but fail to recognize it as it is.
Yeah, so actually we discussed this several times. Now, as we discussed, suppose you are developing, Chittanupassana. I'm just taking an example, but you can do it in Kayanupassana, you can do it in Vedanupassana. But now we are explaining through Chittanupassana. Say you are allowing various thoughts to come. You are not afraid of them. You already gain fair amount of mindfulness, clear comprehension. So you know the nature. So you know when a lustful thought comes, it is not permanent. And you allow it to come, allow it to be, allow it to go. Now it has gone. Now the mind is little free. There's a little gap. Then another thought is coming. you do the same process. Now it is also gone. So likewise, you recognize kind of a gap between thoughts. They are not sort of intervened, intertwined. Rather, they are coming one after the other as a series, one after the other. So you can clearly recognize their distinct nature, distinct characteristics. And you can even notice certain gaps between two thoughts. Now, as you are further and further improving, so this gap start to enhance. Now, less and less thoughts, but more and more sort of a resting period, absence of thoughts. So during this absence, if you are not holding any kind of element characteristic, any kind of a bodily process, if you are not holding any kind of a feeling, now the mind is also free. So at this situation, mind can be free because there is no attachment towards the body, no attachment towards the perceptions, signs. Mind also has cleared. And there is no attachment towards any kind of construction. You are not making any chetana, intention. You intentionally not thinking anything at all. All the thoughts, naturally they came due to certain other reasons. It is not that you willfully think. Rather, whatever those thoughts occurred also have gone because you have no interest on them. You have kind of a dispassionate attitude towards them. So they also have gone. Now the mind is fairly pure and free. So this freedom has to be further enhanced. So this is how actually we have to come to that state. And once you are able to touch it, you got to enhance it further and further.
Okay, thank you. And I like to invite Chitva Devi to please ask the next question.
Yes, thank you. Bhante, now you spoke about discussion and cessation and relinquishment. Now, when we go into a very peaceful state and the thoughts are getting less, and you say we are not grasping or holding on to anything, we are just watching whatever there is, and there is a peaceful mind and the body is extremely comfortable. So, are we letting, I mean, we are not holding on to them, but we are also experiencing some very beautiful we are experiencing something very beautiful. Isn't that right?
Beautiful in the sense, I mean, it is not colorful.
No, not colorful, but it is a peaceful state, yes. And a very comfortable sort of situation. So it is not as if we want to, we are having a revulsion towards that situation.
Yeah, correct. So basically, I mean, we are having a revulsion towards the impermanent, transient, conditioned phenomena, but we have kind of a experience in calmness, tranquility in this new state. There is no grasping there. There is no I there, by the way. And therefore, it is beautiful.
Yes, yes. So, the dispassion is developed towards the defilements and the hindrances. Would that be right if I said that?
Correct, correct. Yes. So, whatever the sights, sounds, smells, taste, tactile sensations, whatever the thoughts. So, you have dispassion towards them. And you are not passionately holding them.
No.
Yeah.
And I think that is manifested in your daily life. Like one finds that one is not holding on to various experiences that one would have held on to in the past.
Yes.
Would that be right if I said that?
Correct. Correct. Actually, we start this experience in a more narrow point of view at our, say, in our walking session, maybe in our sitting session, but as we are growing it, improving it further and further, so it can actually manifest in daily activities as well, as you said. Now, even though we started it to experience in a more say narrow form, but it starts to grow and it starts to even mold our character And as you said previously, we are quite holding to things, we are being attracted to various things, we are passionate on various things, but now it becomes somewhat say calm, relinquishing, and the mind is not holding. Even though sights are there, mind like to stay secluded. Even though sounds are there, mind is not attracted towards them, but rather mind likes to be secluded. So likewise, mind is finding its own independence, not depending on sights, sounds, thoughts, etc. Rather, mind has now recognized its own sort of a home position, kind of an original baseline, kind of a comfortable region where it can maintain a non-friction area, non-friction, say, abiding.
Yes, Bhante, but as you were explaining to Jennifer also, that there are times when the ill will does come when you are interacting in a work situation or whatever, these things stir up you, Bhante. It doesn't just disappear altogether.
Yes, yes. So it depends. Actually, certain minor things may quickly disappear, and you have a fair amount of resilience to come to the previous situation. But there may be certain, say, strong situations which may even penetrate to the heart and stay there for a long time. And so more and more you start to letting go, more and more you have some forgiveness. So those qualities actually helpful to sort of allowing those situations also to fade away without holding them. Because now when we are holding and when we are repeatedly taking it to the mind, so it makes a kind of a scar in the mind. You know, yes. I mean, you already recognize that the mind is fairly pure. That is the original state of the mind. But these incidents actually making us kind of a scar in the mind, kind of a pediment, is what is called a mark in the mind, and it is not useful. It is basically ruining the purity of the mind. So you are simply not keeping it for a long time, simply returning and coming back to the purity without holding those grudges in a way.
So our meditation helps in, because the more we come to this pure state or this not holding and not grasping state, that experience helps us to develop our paramis. Would you say that is correct? Four divine abodes, does that help?
That's also true, because now say, actually the mind already become fairly expanded. It is not narrowed down now. Now when it comes to Brahma Viharas, so they have the nature of expanded mind. So you have loving kindness towards everybody. You have, say, altruistic joy towards everybody. You have compassion towards everybody, including yourself. And you have equanimity towards everybody. So that has the kind of an unlimited characteristic in the mind. So mind has become fairly opened. It is not narrowed down. It's not a kind of fixation. Rather, it's a fairly spreaded, expanded, universal kind of a situation in the mind. So therefore, it's actually growing with vipassana. So actually, these four Brahma Viharas are one way of expanding. And through vipassana, this animitta, sunyata, and they are also cheto vimutti, the freedom of the mind, and that also have that nature, so that also expands the mind.
So there are those things we have, universal love, compassion, all that is probably at an advanced state, I would say. Isn't that right, Bhante?
As far as I can see, so they are there in the mind. So actually,
yes.
So they are our inherent nature is, in a way, we can say, kind of a goodness.
Yes.
So that is why Buddha mentioned, Pabassaram idam bhikkave chittam, tanchako agantukehi upakkilesi upakkilittam. So Buddha mentioned, monks, this original nature of the mind is quite pure, quite sort of illuminated. So because of the intruding defilements, it has become impure. Now this is known by the wise disciple, and therefore he is now slowly removing these intruding defilements. And now he is already grounded on that purity. So it is inherently pure.
So we are going back to the original state by gradually and slowly we are going back to the original pure state.
Yeah, exactly. So that is not at the beginning it may appear like dull. Actually yesterday also during that Slovakia retreat, someone was telling that it's kind of a dull state. Because we experience pleasure by entertaining sights, by entertaining sounds, by entertaining various smells, tastes, tactile sensations and thoughts. So that's a very gross way of entertainment. And that is how we keep our mind occupied. But now we are leaving things aside. Now we are not going for that kind of a gross entertainment with the sights, sounds, smells, etc. So therefore, at the beginning, it appears like somewhat boring, somewhat dull. But as you are improving your, sensitivity of the mind, so then you understand, so this gross entertainment is some sort of a friction in the mind. So your mind has to go and involve, and you have to construct, you have to fabricate, and in a deluded manner, you have to entertain. But as the delusion is removed gradually, slowly, so the mind touching its original pure state, it is so calm, so tranquil, and it's a kind of a quiet state, free from any inner chatter, free from any agitation. So that is where Buddha mentioned, okay, this is the sort of original state of the mind, it is inherently pure, and try to stay there, but it doesn't mean that you are sort of staying there with more attached, more deep concentration, but you have to stay there in a more comfortable, more relaxed manner. You can't do that actually, even though I am telling you, you can't do that till you have the defilements, till we have the defilements. So that is where actually we have to allow this free state to break because of the defilements. Then we understand the defilements. Actually, we are coming or loosening the concentration so that the pure state, unattached state, non-grasping state become, distracted or become destroyed. And there we understand the intruding defilements. And now we are not promoting them. We simply allow them to fade away. So that manner, actually, we are weakening the defilement. Now we can maintain that an unattached state in a more comfortable, more easy manner. So this is how actually this state has to be utilized in Vipassana. Yeah. So this is a very interesting practice in a way, and it requires a fair amount of patience, and you have to be well grounded, you have to be really humble, and you got to recognize your own defilements honestly. So, likewise, it's a long process in a way.
Yes, of course, Panti. Yes. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Okay.
Panti, that I believe is the last question that I have so far.
Okay, so good. So then actually we have come to the end of today's session, and we have spent some time in discussing the sutta, and again we spent a very good conversation. So with that, we were able to accumulate a lot of merits. Let's share these merits with all the beings. Let's recite the traditional verses. Ettavata ca amhehi sambatam punya sampadam sambe deva anumodantu sambha sampatti siddhiya. Ettavata ca amhehi sambatam punya sampadam sambe bhuta anumodantu sambha sampatti siddhiya. Ettavata ca amhehi sambatam punya sampadam sabbe satta anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhiya. Akasattha ca bummattha devanaga mahiddhika punyantam anumoditva chiram rakkantu sasanam. Akasattha ca bummattha devanaga mahiddhika පුඤ්ඤන්තං අනුමෝදිත්වා චිරං රක්ඛන්තු දේශනං ආකාසට්ඨා ච බුම්මට්ඨා දේවා නාග මහිද්దికා පුඤ්ඤන්තං අනුමෝදිත්වා චිරං රක්ඛන්තු මම් පරං ඉදං වෝ ඥාතීනං හෝතු සුඛිතා හුන්තු ඥාතයෝ ඉදං වෝ ඥාතීනං හෝතු සුඛිතා හුන්තු ඥාතයෝ ඉදං වෝ ඥාතීනං හෝතු සුඛිතා හුන්තු ඥාතයෝ ඉමිනා පුඤ්ඤ කම්මේන මාමේ බාල සමාගමෝ සතං සමාගමෝ හෝතු යාව නිබ්බාන පත්තියා ඉමිනා පුඤ්ඤ කම්මේන මාමේ බාල සමාගමෝ සතං සමාගමෝ හෝතු යාව නිබ්බාන පත්තියා ඉමිනා පුඤ්ඤ කම්මේන මාමේ බාල සමාගමෝ සතං සමාගමෝ හෝතු යාව නිබ්බාන පත්තියා සාදු සාදු සාදු.